Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is The Big Picture and this is AB Dawji. The Big Picture broadcasting on Radio Islam and Radio Al Ansar simultaneously. So, how's it going, eh? All peace and harmony at home? Everything coming up roses? Ah, that's so wonderful. Helping the fro with making up the bed, sweeping, washing dishes, and having nice, intelligent conversations, discussions with the kids. So nice. You know, I was really laughing this morning. We were having breakfast when my daughter Faiza's phone rang. It was her friend's mother on the line asking, what you're doing? And so on. And while talking, Faiza said, yes, Nazim, that's her husband, is working from home. And Dad is also working from home, working on our nerves. Well, what can I do, eh? I'm a low-level brain tower. As soon as she comes from hospital, and she's always very tired, I ask her how's things, what's the situation there, any virus cases and so on, and many, many other questions. Anyway, I had a good laugh. Dad is working from home, and he's working on our nerves. I don't know where she got her sharp tongue from, eh? So, in these depressing times, we can still see the funny side, just to keep the spirits up. And of course, nothing to do but maybe catch a DOS and have a chow and then get groggy again and have another. One fellow said, hey, my clothes are shrinking, eh? I must check. Maybe the fro bought some other washing powder. Another fellow said, they said we must wear gloves and masks. I went to the supermarket and people were wearing clothes. And so the funny stories are filling up WhatsApp. And I have no problem with that at all. It lifts the gloom a bit. And speaking about gloom, my dear listeners, let me tell you this. I feel a deep sense of dismay, disgust. I feel distraught. I feel sad. And sometimes I feel absolutely sickened. Ever since this coronavirus arrived, a terrible disease has infected the minds of many in the Ummah. As I said, I thought that the mosque issue was an open and shut case. Well, that's exactly what it is. Some want it open and some want it shut. The debate is not what particularly makes me nauseated. It's the level of the discussion, the discourse. One can't even describe it as a discussion. It's an argument. Verbal fisticuffs in which vile language is used, name-calling, insults, character assassination, filthy invectives, gutter language. It's horrible. Horrible, 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 I tell you. It's a brawl. The whole country is waging a desperate war against this destructive, invisible enemy, the virus. And we are waging war against one another. What's happening to us Muslims? How did we degenerate to this level? And what is a Muslim? A Muslim is one who is filled with humility. A person of sense and sensibility. A person of even temperament. Great character. You know, Ramadan is coming up. It teaches us to control our nafs. It's a testing ground which hopefully will prevail for the rest of the year until the next Ramadan to retain the good things that we learned from that exercise, that month. Not just overindulging in food and drink, but to exercise the mind, to refrain from anger, harsh and hurtful words. A Muslim is a person of dignity in his words and in his deeds. A person of dignity. The character that we should always be aspiring to is that of our beloved Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He treated everyone with love, kindness and respect. Even his enemies who insulted him. And you know very well the story of that old woman who showered him with filth whenever he passed by. Yet he did not respond with any show of anger and irritation. we say that he, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, is the best of examples. Yet, so often, we are far removed from his noble character, quick to be angry and irritated, and wildly hit out at anyone who we disagree with. I'm not addressing, as I told you, the substance of the debate, closing the masjid or not. I'm speaking about the way in which we address one another. What has happened to us, dear listeners? What has happened to us? The corona war is raging, and we are in a fiery war with one another. Dare I say it? Dare I say it? It's the ulema war, and it is highly destructive, causing divisions and discord. And you know where the cap fits. The ulema war. These are our leaders. We look up to them. They set the example for us to follow. And some from us ordinary people have taken up the example of those who insult and demonize and have got onto the social media bandwagon to pour out more unbridled filth and hate of their own against the ulema. You know, I was reading a lengthy article which was written some time ago. A really brilliant one. Brilliant article. I was reading it yesterday about how the four madhabs came about and how scholars reached their particular conclusions and interpretations with amity, not enmity. Did you get that? With amity, not enmity. Friendliness, not condemnation and confrontation. I really like that article. One particular part of this article struck me as relevant to the current poisonous disharmony that's taking place. Now listen to this extract. Given the depth of scholarship needed to understand the revealed text accurately and the extreme warnings we have been given against distorting the revelation, it is obvious that ordinary Muslims are duty-bound to follow expert opinion rather than rely on their own reasoning and limited knowledge. This obvious duty was well known to the early Muslims. The Caliph Umar radiallahu anhu followed certain rulings of Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu, saying, "I would be ashamed before God to differ from the view of Abu Bakr." And Ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu, in turn, despite being a mustahid in the fullest sense, used in certain issues to follow Umar radiallahu anhu. According to Al-Shabi, listen to this, six of the companions of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to give fatwas to the people: Ibn Mas'ud, Umar ibn al-Khattab, Ali, Zayd ibn Thabit, Ubay ibn Ka'ab, and Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. May Allah be pleased with all of them. And out of these, three would abandon their own judgment in favor of the judgments of three others. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud would abandon his own judgment for the judgment of Umar. Abu Musa would abandon his own judgment for the judgment of Ali, and Zayd would abandon his own judgment for the judgment of Ubay ibn Ka'b. Here's another extract from the article. No one now recalls the view of the early ulema, which was that Muslims should tolerate divergent interpretations of the sunnah as long as these interpretations have been held by reputable scholars. As Sufyan al-Thawri said, "If you see a man doing something over which there is a debate among the scholars and which you yourself believe to be forbidden, you should not forbid him from doing it." The alternative to this policy is, of course, a disunity and rancor which will poison and cripple the Muslim community from within. Wow, did you get the last part? The alternative to this policy is, of course, a disunity and rancor which will poison and cripple the Muslim community from within. So there you are. Perhaps those words sum it all up very well. The whole article, this thesis, is brilliant. I learned a great deal from it. And if you would like it, if you would like me to drop you a copy, just send me an email. abie@iafrica.com. abie@iafrica.com. And on the subject line, just write the word article. Brilliant. I learned so much from it. And let me just see if I can find what I'm looking for here. Right. So, the article is written by Abdul Hakim Murad, a top-notch scholar. Some of you may have received via WhatsApp a link to his absolutely wonderful lecture entitled A Perspective on the Pandemic. It's brilliant, brilliant. I listened to it twice, and I will be playing it on Radio Al Ansar after the 12 o'clock news. You must listen to it. Eh? Very inspiring and uplifting. Very inspiring and very uplifting indeed. By the way, if you are offended by anything I said so far, well, sorry bro, I can't help you. These are my thoughts on what's happening out there, and what's happening out there is disgraceful to the extreme. Disgraceful to the extreme. Now, maybe I'll make you more cross. Because I'm going to wade into the subject of the masjid issue, the ulema war, the grand debate. Everyone has some thoughts about this issue. And of course, I have mine, which at first I thought, well, I'll just keep it to myself. In case some stones are thrown at me. But what the heck? I have put my head in the lion's mouth many times before. And of course, you know, our people will always find some reason to criticize. Almost reflexively, automatically. Last week, I decided to find out what's happening in other countries. So I contacted guides and agents who I know very well to give us an idea of what was happening in their particular countries. Guess what? Guess what? A few people complained. A.B. Dauji is promoting his tours. I couldn't believe it. So listen, Mota, if you complained. How can I be promoting my tours when there are no tours? Zero. Nothing. Khalas. Dead. Ask all the travel agents. No one will be traveling for a very long time. No group tours for me till maybe December, inshallah, or maybe next year. Only Allah knows. So yes, some people find it very easy to find fault, to criticize. Never mind. The world will be a dull place if we were all the same, ne? Right. So, here's a disclaimer. Here's a disclaimer. I'm not a mufti or a maulana. Not even a zigzag maulana. Or not a buzruk or scholar or nothing. Nothing of the sort. So, let's start. If a staff member of mine called me during a very busy, say December, very busy time when I have four tours, and said, Mr. Dauji, I'm sorry, you know, I'm on the freeway to work, but the cops are stopping us and turning us back because further on, all along the freeway, people, hundreds of people are stoning the cars. Mr. Dauji, what must I do? And the answer is obvious. Go back home. I'll be really silly, perhaps even heartless to say, well, you know what, you are obliged to come to work because we are very busy here, you know. You have to come to work. Don't give me any excuses. It would be very silly of me to say that. So if I say go home, you would regard me as a compassionate person, right? A good, caring person. Correct? Right. Part two. What is the first thing that Muslims say before we commence any action or activity? What is the first thing? Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of Allah, the compassionate and the merciful. In the name of Allah, the compassionate and the merciful. In the name of Allah, the compassionate and the merciful. We say this the whole day. Whole day. The embodiment of the 99 names of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala encompasses these qualities of infinite compassion and mercy. Allah has set down rules and regulations that we should follow. In some instances, He has, in His compassion and mercy, directed that under certain conditions, things can change. For example, when you are traveling, we are told to shorten the salah. Ease your difficulty. Compassionate and merciful. So, if I am afraid, fearful, given the strong evidence that this deadly virus spreads in crowded places and therefore do not attend congregational prayer in the masjid, will my compassionate and merciful Allah be angry with me? Let me repeat that. So if I am very afraid, given the strong evidence that the deadly virus spreads in crowded places and therefore do not attend congregational prayer in the masjid, will my compassionate and merciful Allah be angry with me? My taqwa, my deep love and worship of Allah is declared from my home only because I could be in danger and then be a danger to so many others if I get the virus. Will my compassionate and merciful Allah condemn me for this? Will you be angry with me? Dear listeners, I ventured into an area of theology that is not my domain, but it's a thought that's been swirling around in my head. What's the answer to that question that I just asked? I leave that to you, dear listeners. Dear kind, sensible, reasonable, nice people that you are, don't take out your swords and chop my head off. Or call me names like Fasir, Zindik, Kafir, Ignoramus, Munafik, Agent of Iblis, Jahil, Juhala, Miscreant, Murtad, and certainly, don't call me a reverend, okay? Or the new one, a Zindik with a necroid heart. Yar, sounds so poetic, right? But don't you dare call me that. Otherwise, I'll call Zahir to sue you, okay? Okay. And the masjid open and shut case. All I have to say is this. Please, let the undignified, puerile, mudslinging stop. Let the undignified, puerile, mudslinging stop. My favorite saying is this. Let us disagree. But let's not become disagreeable. Let us disagree, but let us not become disagreeable. Disagreeable meaning rude and uncouth. Let's rather use our energies to fight our common, invisible, ruthless, devastating enemy, the coronavirus. And this brings me to the president's speech about the extension of the lockdown. Avid listeners of The Big Picture will remember that when Cyril Bai became president, I referred to him as Cyril Ramaphosa. That name seems to have some prophetic qualities about it because we are told to stay in our homes. Perhaps I should tweak the name a little bit now and refer to him as Cyril Ramaphosa. Stay in your homes. But shame, I feel sorry for him. What a terrible time for him to become president when the sky is falling down. You know, he has such a nice way of speaking, so soothing. Thank you, South Africans, for standing together. We had to make tough decisions, but it was to save lives. We shall overcome. So nice tone of voice, eh? His speech was so reassuring. We are going through tough times, but we'll sort it out. Don't worry. But behind his composed, big uncle-like demeanor is, I'm sure, a very worried man. In fact, I think we have a very worried government. It's got two bad choices to deal with, to decide upon. Two bad choices. Don't extend the lockdown and everything goes back to normal. Businesses open, people back to work, 16 million in taxis every day, children back in school and so on. And the result will be that the virus will run amok. Havoc, the epidemic will be in overdrive. Our terrible healthcare system, which was already on its knees before corona, will shut down completely. Bodies will be piling up. Like in Ecuador, for example, where they just leave the bodies wrapped in plastic out in the street, hoping maybe the municipality will come and fetch it. A horror story. Mass graves. All these things are already happening in economically advanced countries where, like in New York, 700 to 800 people are dying every 24 hours. And, of course, they have got billions to spend. Lots of hospitals and medical staff, protective gear, all kinds of things. Yet they can't cope. It's also happening in London. Mass graves. I saw a clip today, early this morning, of Muslims being buried in long trenches, graves. Let's face it, we here have almost nothing. So the difficult choice for Cyril was to extend the lockdown for another 2 weeks. Very difficult choice. Or a decision to extend the lockdown for another 2 weeks. But that also has very serious repercussions. Our economy was already in ICU before Corona. So, businesses closed, workers sitting at home, means no economic activity. And so, our situation gets even worse. Many businesses in these tough times may not open again. They are facing bankruptcy, massive job losses, extreme poverty. And by the way, poverty and unemployment has seen South Africa having one of the highest crime rates in the world. With further economic decline, the crime rate will shoot up dramatically. Desperate people require, they need to feed their families, will go to any extent to survive. Some looting has started already. So, these are the two bad choices that our president, our government, has had to decide upon. One of them. Lockdown or no lockdown. So the best of the two bad choices is lockdown. Extended by 2 months or 2 weeks. What you say, my colleagues in the cabinet, you must have asked them, what do you think? Must I make it for 2 months or 2 weeks? And the answer probably was, boss, we already said 3 weeks. If we tell people 2 months, our citizens will be shocked. Maybe they will come out in the streets. Maybe there will be riots. Let us do it step by step. Just keep it for 2 weeks for now. So, dear listeners, this is where I come in. A.B. Dauji, the prophet of doom. That doesn't mean that I'm a sales rep for a cockroach spray. Yes, I am a prophet of doom. A bearer of bad news. When we are dealing with the coronavirus, we are in uncharted waters. The whole world is in uncharted waters. Nobody really knows what to do. People are bewildered. I'm speaking about medical people, doctors and scientists. They are contradicting reports, all kinds of researchers. But the situation is getting worse by the day. Shocking numbers of people are dying. The one universal response is the lockdown. So what happens when it is lifted? Say, for example, here in South Africa. I still remember one person saying, when the first lockdown was announced by the president, hey, we are having a party because the corona is coming from China at 12 o'clock. So, if after 2 weeks the lockdown is lifted, what would that mean? Does that mean that at the end of this month, corona will be no more and all will be well, we all will be living happily thereafter? Maybe some people think that after 2 weeks, it's over, finish. Of course not. Some of the people could have caught the virus 2 days or maybe 5 days before the lockdown. The lockdown was lifted. 2 days or 5 days before the lockdown is lifted. So, which means that their condition will continue after the lockdown is lifted. And let me say it again. Many of you who are listening to this program can stay in your homes because perhaps you have nice homes, nice bigger, maybe 2 or 3 or 4 rooms, bathrooms, electricity, maybe even a garden. And your condition is that you are just bored and restless. But you can stay in your homes in reasonable comfort. But what about the informal settlements? The so-called squatter camps, John Dolls, one room, 5 to 6 people, all jammed together tight. All the John Dolls are jammed together tightly. No running water, no electricity, outside toilets. No space. No space. No space means no social distancing.
I can read you the comments of people living there from an article that's in front of me. But you can easily imagine the suffering, the danger that they face. Wallahi, it's heartbreaking. It's frightening. Please make dua for these people. They are locked in with the virus. It's proliferating, marinating there. School children are back home. Workers are all back home. Day and night, it's now densely populated. It's like a pressure cooker. And when, or should I say, if the lockdown is lifted, people will come out from there and then, well, what can I say? The figures we are hearing now, that perhaps just over 2,000 are infected and so on, will just pale into insignificance. Again, I want to repeat what Health Minister William Key said. It's the calm before the storm. They know it. The government knows it. The lockdown, stay in your homes policy, is there to slow down the spread of the virus. Slow down so that the health services are not suddenly overwhelmed with huge number of cases. That's what it's there for. And that's what it's there for, or put in place in other countries around the world. So that it doesn't all happen at once. So, what's the big picture here? What's the big picture? Well, most people will get the virus. It does not discriminate whether you are rich or poor. And Bojo himself has got it. And I'm speaking about British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, Bojo. He's got it. And the doctor who was his main advisor just died of it 2 days ago. What do you think of that? And there was a joke going around that it goes something like this. It has just been announced that, I'm having a blank moment here, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, has caught the coronavirus. We hereby send our sympathies to the virus. That's a lousy joke. So yes, people will get it. The vaccine, as we are told, is still maybe 12 months away before it becomes available. And we are also told that if there are those who get it, 80% or so will recover, and therefore 20% will die. It will depend on how your immune system can fight off the virus. Only Allah knows who will fall into that 20% category. Hey, Baji, am I scaring you? But the program is called The Big Picture. So I have to tell you the whole story. Okay, let's move to the next point. And back to the open and shut case of the masjid. In a petition to the government, one of the laments was that Muslims are suffering from spiritual depression. Spiritual depression because of the closure of the mosques. Now, let me say this. The whole country is depressed about the terrible situation we are in. People who are unsure if they're going to have... people who have been working piecemeal jobs, you know, working for the day, hand to mouth, selling things at traffic lights or in little roadside stalls. They are very depressed. Very depressed. As are those whose bosses cannot pay them their salary and during the lockdown, and may even not have jobs when they go back, when the lockdown is lifted. Maybe they won't have jobs. They are extremely worried, as are business people who may not have any business, like maybe a travel agent I know very well, and that's me. This is very scary stuff. Scary, depressing stuff. So yes, perhaps Muslims are feeling that they cannot read their salah in the masjid, or maybe even not be able to perform Tarawih there. Yes, sad, of course. But I think to categorize that as spiritual depression is a bit over the top. I'd like to see the survey carried out that elevates and concludes it to that very serious level of spiritual depression. I wonder how much a person suffering from this spiritual depression would feel if he caught the virus in the masjid and spread it to his family, and some got very sick and even died. What then would be the level of his depression? So yes, people are depressed about very worrying issues, like having no money. And some are less serious issues, like maybe not visiting family. Can't go take your children to visit the grandparents. Or maybe some people are having withdrawal symptoms from not visiting the mall. Or for me, there was a gastronomical depression on Friday. I couldn't go for my bucket of Manjara's dal. But on a serious note, it worries me greatly. A fear grips me when I see my daughter Faiza drive away to work at the hospital. I keep asking her how she's feeling when she comes back. And earlier this week, my heart stopped when she said that a case of the virus infected a nurse, and about 40 people were now being tested at the hospital where Faiza works. May Allah save her. So, bottom line, let's get our perspectives right. There are people who cannot sleep at night, wondering, worrying, deeply depressed that they cannot feed their families. Okay, did you get my point? Now let me take off my prophet of doom hat and address another issue. The fight against the virus seems like a totally hopeless failure so far. From the numbers that we are seeing, people are just dying all over the place. But I think our dear president should have made one big announcement in his speech. Everyone should wear a mask if they have to leave their homes. Everyone should wear a mask if they have to leave their homes. Now, let me say this. I have been reading a great deal about masks and how efficient they are over the last, yesterday, the whole day. Yes, of course, there are contradictory views amongst experts. And the quality of a mask also will determine to what extent it can withstand the virus entering you. But I don't want to go into that except to say that we should not go out and buy the top quality mask like the N95. There's a great shortage of that, and the medical people working in hospitals and elsewhere really, really need those ones. So, what to do? If you get the cheaper ones, then go out and buy them. Or if not, then make one yourself. It's so easy. Just a cloth tied around your mouth and nose will save others to make your own mask at virtually no cost, almost nothing. And it looks very effective. And I sent it out on all the social media groups that I am on. And if you want it, you can also contact me. Right, and since you are bored to death under house arrest in your homes, may I suggest, ladies, that you do a good deed. Take out that sewing machine from the top of the cupboard where it's collecting dust, and you and, of course, your fat, lump, grumpy hubby can make these face masks. And churn them out. Make many, hundreds. Use thick material, maybe dishcloth or kitchen swabs or things that you find on the internet. It's full up about how to make these things. And get some elastic band, and that's it. And give them out to people. Maybe if you are going to the supermarket, just hand it out there, hand it to the car guards, hand it wherever you find people don't have masks. Or you can give them all to the charity organizations that are collecting food and distributing. Well, do it. It'll keep you busy and make you feel good. And you'll also collect some sawab along the way. So come on, folks. Let's get active. Cyril Mamo should have announced that and also said that there will be a fine if you go out without a mask. Other countries are imposing fines. In Delhi, it's between 200 to 1,000 rupees. In Spain, it's 50 euros. In California, it's up to $1,000. So I urge you, make the mask and wear the mask and give others who don't have. But make a few for yourselves, because after using them, and don't forget, after using them, wash them thoroughly and dry out so that you have others to use. Better some protection than no protection at all. We've run out of time. This is A.B. Dawji bidding you all Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and may Allah keep you safe. Ameen.